$277 for top and a half. For top and a half.
For top and a half.
Savitra, Savitradi, Vibhuti Vihi.
Savitradi, Vibhuti Vihi.
Vishwam.
Vishwam.
Pratapayati.
Pratapayati.
Iti Pratapanaha.
Iti Pratapanaha.
So Pratapana has different meanings. The meaning that it has means like a shining or brilliant or energizing. So the what we're taking here is energizing. So Savitra means sun. Adi, etc. Vibhuti bihi. The vibhutis are the glories of Ishwara. So here they're talking about the universe Pratapayati iti Pratapanaha. The one, Pratapayati is causal, the one who energizes the universe or causes the universe to be brilliant, to shine with energy, with tejas. So the Pratapayati from Pratap, Pratapayati is causal, so the one who causes the universe to be energized, okay, by the sun, Savitra, etc., vibhutis, by his vibhutis. Beginning with the sun. So if it's beginning with the sun, it's going to include all the luminaries. Okay? Because Savitradi. So if you've got that Adi beginning with the sun, then you have to think things that belong in that group. Mm. Right? So otherwise it'd be the whole universe. It would include. So because of Savitra, you're just taking all the manifestations of luminosity. All the ways that... So it'd be like the sun and the fire and the moon, etc., whatever you consider as the luminaries. So, Savitradi Vibhuti Bihi. The Vibhutis are the glories of the Lord. The Vibhutis. Vibhuti Bihi is in the instrumental plural by all of these. By the Vibhutis plural, beginning with Savitra, the sun. Vishwam, the universe. Pratapayati, iti Pratapanaha. So, that's Pratapayati. So, if you say Pratapayati, iti, that means, therefore, that's how we have, that's what makes it Pratapanaha. Mm. Okay, so the one who causes the universe to be energized, the one who energizes the universe by means of the vibhutis beginning with the sun, his glories beginning with the sun. In Sanskrit, they don't use his or her, they don't use those pronouns. You have to add them. Once in a while, they will if it's important, but otherwise, they don't. Mm. But in English, you would. You have to put those in. Okay, so Pratapanaha. Riddha.
Riddha.
Dharma jnana vairagyadi bihi.
Dharma jnana vairagyadi bihi.
Upetatvat.
Upetatvat.
Riddha.
Riddha.
Riddha here has meaning like prosperous or wealthy or abundant. So the one who is prosperous or full of wealth. So what wealth? Dharma, jnana, knowledge, vairagya, etc. So all of the different meanings of Bhagavan. You know, the sixfold meanings of Bhagavan. What are they? They're, who knows? Jnana, Vairagya, Yeshas,
Shri,
Viryam. There's one more. Tejas, but that's the same as Viryam. Jnana, Vairagya, Yeshas, Aishwaryam.
Aishwaryam.
You know, if you ever want to refer to this, Swamiji has a really nice section just at the very beginning of this book.
I remember
breaking down Bhagavan and talking about each one of them. It's in the beginning, the first 20 pages.
The introduction.
Yeah. So, Riddha. Being endowed with dharma, jnana, vairagya, dharma, knowledge, dispassion, and so on. In terms of knowledge, he is sarvajna. So when we say jnanam, sarvajna means all knowledge. When we say all knowledge, what we mean there is that the creation is an infinite expression of knowledge. Whereas, so to understand, just to visualize what that is, if I ask you to imagine, you know, a lake off of a meadow, Okay, since you know the meaning of lake and meadow, etc., you have jnanam of each one of these words. I put them together, and then you immediately pops up in your mind your own version, right, of a lake surrounded by a meadow. Boom, like that. If I said, imagine a girdle within it, so it's, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Nothing happens. There's no knowledge. There's no knowledge there. But if there is knowledge there, the knowledge immediately manifests, you know, in terms of the nama-rupa. So when we say that Bhagavan is sarvajñaha, it means there is no ajñāna. And so all that exists is immediately available for manifestation. You know, it's not like at every moment everything in the universe is manifest, but everything, like for you, not everything is manifest at all times, but, you know, maybe it is on different dimensions for Ishvara, but the point is not that. The point is that this universe is an expression of infinite knowledge, right? So there's no ajnanam, and so just as for your mind, when you think of something, it immediately comes into manifestation. The whole universe is an unmanifest condition, and it's the expression of infinite knowledge when the creation comes into manifestation.
So it doesn't evolve. There's no.
It evolves within itself, because there's continual change going on, and this is growing and that is growing, and things are mixing and matching together. But all of the knowledge is already there.
Yeah.
Right. So we know. It's not non something not, there's no evolution of non-existence, right? So there's no evolution of non-existence. And so it's only that which has been that can evolve and change. Right? So.
Which is mitya.
Yeah. Also the sarva shaktiman. So we say Ishvara, often we say Ishvara is sarva, has sarvajnyatvam, all knowledge, infinite knowledge, and also sarva shaktiman, also has all capacity, all power. Because the universe is in, all of the energy that goes into the manifestation and the movement and all of this, everything that requires change of any kind, you need shakti for that, okay? Or even holding something steady. So all of that energy that is, all of that shakti is, belongs to Ishvara. So Riddha, the one who is wealthy or prosperous in terms of being the one who has all things. Let's do another one. Spashtakshadaha.
Spashtakshadaha.
Spashtam udatam.
Spashtam udatam.
Omkara lakshanam.
Omkara lakshanam.
Aksharam.
Aksharam.
Asyeti.
Asyeti.
Spashtakshadaha.
Spashtakshadaha.
Spashta means clear, like the clarity of a crystal is spashta. So anything that is clear, without any vagueness, any ajnanam, you can even go, but that which is shining with clarity is spashtam. So the akshara, that syllable which is completely clear, om, can be pronounced by anyone, om. So here it says spashtam, udatam. I forgot to look up udatam because I took something for granted with it as the swara, the middle swara. You don't have to say om or om, just om. But it comes om. And so that is, there's nothing vague about it. Let me just look up something. I forgot to do it. The acute accent. You know, that's what they say about a high or sharp note that's only in reference to anudatta. They say udatta, but the thing is, anudatta is the low note, udatta is the middle note, but swarita we would think of as the high note. Okay, but swarita is actually a combination of, it's twofold, it's the udatta plus something for the swarita. So the udatta is considered the high note and anudatta the low note. The
could
swarita,
you demonstrate that?
No.
I want to hear it.
You hear it all the time when we chant. So spashtam udatam omkara lakshanam aksharam. So aksharam is a syllable who's, in this case, the Akshatam, which is Spashtam Udatam, which is clear, very clear, that is referring to, is characterized by, or is the nature of, as for its definition, the Omkara. So Omkara Lakshanam Akshatam Asya, whose Akshara, referring to the Omkara, is Udatam, means Spashtam, very clear.
Akshara.
Spashtam Udatam Omkara Lakshanam Akshatam. Akshatam, think Akshatam is a syllable. Asya, whose Akshara, for whom the syllable, meaning referring to the Omkara, Omkara Lakshanam, is Udatam, is Spashtam, which means Udatam, means very clear in terms of the type of sound. So you say like this. Highly or acutely accented. Lifted, upraised, lofty, elevated. But you have to understand it in terms of spashtam. That's it, the word that they're using.
Acutely what?
Accented.
Like enunciated kind of thing?
No.
You're not taking it down, you're not taking it up. It's udata. It just means that it's sharp and clear. It's the middle tone. But they don't. We don't talk about it like that, really, or think about it. In fact, it can be confusing. I know what they mean, but I kind of know what they mean in Sanskrit, and I can't remember how to, what the words they use for the swarita. The swarita is dun, dun, dun. So there's two things happening in the vocal cords to make the swarita sound. And so they don't mean that. There's only these two sounds, really. The anudata, the low tone, and the udata, which is the sharp, clear tone. Then there's a low tone, and there's the middle tone, and then the swarita. There's two movements of the vocal cords that are needed to make the swarita. So we only have these two, the lower tone or that middle tone, which is high, sharp, and clear. So they're just using that for whatever reason. For spashtam, they're using udata. Spashtam means udatam. The akshara, omkara lakshanam, here referring to the omkara. So lakshanam, like if there's, how many aksharas are there? How many syllables are there? So what is the particular syllable? The particular syllable is omkara lakshanam. It's characterized by the omkara. Is pointing to the omkara. So this omkara akshara is spashtam, is udatam, is completely clear. For whom? That is spashtakshara.
And when you say om, what comes to mind immediately? In this?
What do you think comes to mind when you say om?
Ishwara.
Yeah, the whole creation, the whole knowledge is in om. So Swamiji says the word om is made of the three syllables a, u, m. A and um. A and u make for a diphthong, o, right? So that a and u is o, and then with the m it seals it, om. So the a is the waking state, the u is the taijasa, the dream state, you can say. The makara is the causal state, right? So when you say om, that om is coming from silence. So first there's silence, that's Brahman. You say om, and then the waking state, the dream state, and the causal state, deep sleep state, from the standpoint of the jiva, come with om, and the om resolves back into that Brahman. But then, the more you chant that mantra, what you realize is that the om rises from silence, is sustained by silence, and resolves into silence. The silence is Brahman. And so what is important or what is beautiful about chanting that in a japa, as a japa, is that the mind, after you've done that for a while, automatically creates a viveka, a discrimination between that steady, changeless silence and the mantra rising and setting in the silence. When you start out with, say, doing japa, say you're just doing om, it'll be the om, silence, om, silence, om, silence. Or Om Namah Shivaya, whatever the mantra is. But after you've done it for a while, you realize that the Om, the silence, is the Adhishthana. It's never changing at all. And then the mind can gently focus, as you're doing that mantra, can gently focus on the silence as Brahman, as your own being. So it's very powerful. Japa is very powerful that way in getting to recognize, to know your own self. Because what's so powerful about it is the viveka naturally takes place that differentiates the silence from the sound. And so then you recognize, because actually the mantra stands for Inivritti. Inivritti, right? It's just, it's a sacred sound, but it's nevertheless a vritti. And then that way, if you practice that japa in that way, you start to recognize, get used to recognizing the changeless presence of yourself, no matter what the vritti is, no matter what the experience is. And you recognize so many things. You also recognize that the mantra is not covering you, right? The mantra is taking place in silence. It's not covering silence. Right? And so your own being is never covered by whatever vritti happens to be there. You see what I mean? So that's knowledge. We can think, people can get into notional thinking, which in fact, in Vedanta, you have to make sure that your students don't get into that idea that in order to be with yourself, you have to withdraw the universe. The universe is mitya. That means it doesn't have any capacity to cover you in any way. What's covering you is ajnanam that causes you to superimpose the experiences, the vrittis you're having upon that, what we call anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition. Because of ajnanam, the mind has always taken itself to have, for its swarupa, for its nature, Brahman, the self. Like a red hot iron ball. And so there's never a thought in the mind to differentiate that, or to even think about it, because I am just a conscious being. This body, mind, sense, circumstance enjoys consciousness, and when I die, I have no idea what happens. Does a consciousness go too? Or is there something about me that's free of this body? I don't know. Is there something I'm not aware of, or what? So this viveka has to take place. As the viveka takes place, you start to recognize your presence always, no matter what the vritti is. As your mind starts to recognize, as the mind starts to settle down, recognizing the ananda swarupa of yourself, that the ananda belongs to the atma, not to the world. As that becomes, over time, as the mind assimilates that fact through recognition, not through just thought, through recognition of the truth of it, the mind, you find your mind falling in love with the ananda. It's always in love with ananda. That's what it cares about. The whole mind cares about ananda, nothing else. Getting rid of anything that stops the ananda. But when the ananda is superimposed onto the world, or under specific things in the world, superimposed on the whole world, then you're in love with Ishvara. But superimposed on particular things, and so that means my ananda, there's a mutual superimposition between ananda and that object, and then I'm in love with that object. I need that, I want that. That's the ajnanam. Viveka is required to differentiate the ananda, give it back to the self, to its own the nature of the self, and let the world be the world. But don't superimpose the ananda on the world. So this is something that gradually happens as, I'd say, the emotions and the unconscious that are throwing up all of these different kinds of reactions and whatnot come up into the light of your knowledge and are sorted through and start to fall off, so that your mind has much more freedom just to be with yourself. Otherwise, until that happens, you have to be rooted in yourself, take care of those emotional issues, just like being rooted in yourself, you take care of the issues of the people that are in your life. You have to accommodate or help or do, you have to do that internally. So.
That's not endless though, is it?
No, it's not endless. Not endless in terms of the biggies, the big things that really cause a problem for you. There'll always be an infinite number of little things. but you can handle those.
Yeah, those are easier.
They're easier. You can dismiss them, you blow them away. As long as you go like this.
Yeah.
Okay, why don't we stop there?
Wow, what a beautiful class.
Mm-hmm.